Kevin O'Connor this morning, so this guy basically pioneered that. He did it before the internet was around. He just did it the old-fashioned way, and he robbed a armed car.
How's Kevin look these days?
How's Kevin look?
Yeah, how does he look?
He seems fine.
Look, there's a fat joke coming
up.
Well,
he put on a bunch of weight at one point. I was just wondering whether he took any of it off.
I'm not perceptive enough to really comment on that.
You're the eyes of the Connecticut people. When you go out, we're a radio station, so you have to be their eyes. You have to kind of notice these details.
Well, all right. He didn't strike me as being particularly heavy today, nor did he strike me as being particularly thin the last time I saw him.
All right.
So that doesn't help you at all.
No. But it sounds like maybe he's, gotten on the treadmill a little bit. I mean, Bruce has lost a ton of weight, and it seems to me that, as U.S. attorney, he ought to set an example for fitness a little bit for his agents.
Well, Dick Blumenthal is handling the setting the example for
weight control.
Dick
Blumenthal is
control.
Like Ally McBeal. I mean, Dick Blumenthal should be hospitalized.
So he makes up for it.
Dick Blumenthal should be like on IV Duncan Hines brownies or something just to get a little bit of weight on.
You are a sick man.
All right, bye. He doesn't know what it's like. I used to, work out of the Y before I turned against him.
Why was that?
That's very complicated.
Yeah, sure it is.
I'm mad at the YMCA. Blumenthal would be in there, changing. It was like watching Mr. Burns from The Simpsons get naked or something. It was, kind of creepy. But we're getting off the subject. So anyway, that's their flimsy explanation as to why Victor...
It's not a very good one.
It seems to me...
Maybe you invested it.
Yeah. Maybe you bought a bunch of Cristal and some gangsta bitches. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I know that I'm not supposed to think this, but there's a little tiny part of me that goes, go, Victor. And 1983 and they still don't want to have you. Run, Victor, run.
That's good.
Nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
Nobody got hurt. They got a lot of money. And,
go, Victor, go.
Run, Victor, run. It's okay with me. I don't think everybody should take down and out, but every once in a while, it's kind of nice to see somebody pull something like this off. I'm sure Los Machadores have done all kinds of bad things with the money, and I'm sure I'll be brought to heel about this, but I'm sure I'm also not alone in sort of thinking this.
When winter weather hits, depend on
virtual guidance for a radically new life.
Thank you. Very nice.
We need that. We need spiritual change right here, right now, because we began our show today. We began our broadcast day today by being lied to by technical people here. We need to explain, first of all, this radio station, although we do have human beings working here, it's also run by this kind of HAL-like computer called Prophet.
Right.
It's like HAL in 2001. It's got a computer and it hates us. And every once in a while, pumps all the oxygen out of one of the rooms here and tries to kill people and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, most days, Prophet are not too bad. Well, so we were having a bad day with Prophet yesterday, and Bobby's having to do all this stuff, and they have this thing called. I'd only find this about today. They have a thing on the computer called, I'm not making this up, called Smiley Face Alerts. I don't know what that is.
Well, right now on this computer.
Are we having Smiley Face Alerts right
now? There's this thing blinking. It's a, what it does is it blinks like the eyes expand.
It's like Pac-Man or something.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it looks like.
So, but anyway, so we had the Prophet Master was in here during our show yesterday trying to make the Prophet work.
Right.
And the Prophet Master is in the building today. So I was just asking some questions of our Vulcan-like engineer, Tim Helmecki, who, because, in fact, he's an emotionless Vulcan, he actually feels more affinity for the computer system than he does for the human being.
Exactly.
And so he was like, you were there. Did I get a straight answer ever?
No, I think he was.
About whether the problems were anticipated or...
Right. He was bending the truth. Yeah. He was fibbing. He was lying. Yeah. He was standing, and he was doing, it was amazing. The disrespect, first of all, it was handed your way.
Right. It was really like listening to Scotty on Star Trek.
Right.
Can I explain why the computers are not working? They cannot take the stress. You have to fire off the commercials by hand?
That kind of thing. You're absolutely correct.
But that's the thing about Scotty. The reason that Scotty was popular, the reason that he was an icon... he was a brilliantly drawn caricature, is that the technical people everywhere lie all the time. That's all they ever do. They know how things work, and nobody else does, so they don't ever have to tell you the truth, because it's not like you could, as long as they stick together, It's not like you could ever prove them wrong.
Did you notice an element of condescension to it?
Yeah, and they make up names for things that probably don't even exist. There probably are no dilithium crystals. He just sort of says there are, you know. And it's the same thing around here. I mean, you know, we get told all this stuff that's not true.
Smiley face alert?
Yeah. Oh, yes, smiley face alert.
What's this thing going to do? I mean, its eyes start to bug out and its mouth opens. What's it going to do?
I don't know.
Is it like
a nasty computer?
It's
going to
jump off the screen and start eating people.
It's fundamentally inimical to human life. And we have to work with it every day. I would feel sorry for us if I were you. We have some calls here. Dawned on me. Maybe I'm wrong about this. Let me ask you your opinion.
Highly doubtful.
Charles Hodgkin, like, totally phoning it in these days. The Sunday morning show is good. I mean, that's still good. The TV show. That's a good show.
I really, you know, to be honest, I don't hear Charles.
But he's like on Roy and Debbie and stuff like that. And it's,
well,
you know.
I'm often, at that time of the day, I'm often involved in
funny shapes in your cereal sometimes.
It's kind of like that at this point. I don't think he's really putting in a whole lot of work into this.
Well, maybe not.
He doesn't sound like he gives a rat's patootie about Brunette teddy bears either, to tell you the truth.
Well, I guess it would all depend on...
You can get one of these bears if you want to. Don't ask me how.
Because I don't.
Because I'm falling asleep here in the studio doing this commercial. That's how engaged I am.
I think he's phoning it in, and you know what?
He may be phoning it in.
That would be kind of an interesting little regular feature for us to do, like people who are phoning it in. And I think there are a lot of them.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree.
He's definitely phoning it in. As I guess, maybe I'm the one who's pointed this out. The Morning Dowd has been phoning it in for some time. Although now that she's decided she hates her family and they're destroying her, her column has gotten a lot more interesting. You know, she hates Christmas, she hates her family. All the things that Rush is beating her up for, I actually kind of...
There are going to be some people at The Current, apparently, that have to phone it in because they're going to be doing so many different, you know, additional things.
Yeah, I don't see how they're...
Too much fried food can make you feel like this.
I got a hill, I don't know how to do it.
Can we give out a special line for X-Con, too? 1-800-953-1080.
You were doing Florida time.
Oh, man.
Oh, it doesn't work. Then it's perfect. Let's go back to Deb from West Hartford.
Deb.
Hi, Deb. Well, now they are going through. They're announcing the baseball players who were not using steroids. So far, Mackie Sasser and Dal Mackie. It's time for Sports and Proud, the very French sports discussion they met. I've asked
Jerry Brody.
This is Joe Crispino, and so for Steven and myself, Louis, that's on the air.
Keep your pants on. Bruce and Colin will be right back, all right?
So we have to figure out who else is phoning in. It should be a regular feature, I'm sure, though.
Who's phoning it in?
Phoning it in.
I think it should.
Because there's no question Charles Osgood is phoning that radio commentary stuff in at this point.
Sometimes when you look at the clouds, you can see animals. Well, that's all I have for today. Thanks very much.
Yes. We have another 2 minutes left.
Whoops. Well, let's do a commercial.
Well, we want to know who else. It's 522-WPIC, 1-800-9-2-0.
You're going to allow people to call up with who's phoning it in?
Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is there anybody
you know what that's going to be like? It's going to be hell.
Maybe who never phones it in. Like, one reason I like Bob Wilson is he never phones it in. You know? I mean, he's always basically...
Bob Wilson, the TV guy?
Yeah. They have a profile of him in Hartford Magazine. I'd forgotten, like, all the really stupid stuff that he's done to almost get himself killed. Being dropped through the ice at one point.
You have to be able to sense these things, you know, to feel what actually happens when somebody falls through the ice. How else would it be? It wouldn't be realistic if they did it, you know, and maybe in a safer way.
And they're going to have to keep Bob away from this Michael Ross story because, you know.
What's it like to be executed?
Yeah. But here's some news from our deputy science editor, Bill Hill, the gentleman biker. A new research in chimpanzees being left-handed. This is good news for a left-handed people. Has little to do with the language part of the brain, as has been thought, and more to do with motor skills, and that means that lefties have probably been around much longer than believed, at least 5 million years, when scientists say that humans and apes branched out off the primary tree. And those of you who are right-handed, of course, basically remained apes. And those of us who are left-handed have to carry forward the work of starting a human civilization. Being left-handed must confer some advantages, says William Hopkins, a psychologist at Emory University's Yerkes National Primate Research Center, who led the studies. There must be a reason they've hung around so long. About 1 in 10 of us have dominant left-handed hands, and some scientists say it's hereditary, although specific genes have not been found. We do have more autism, dyslexia, and schizophrenia, all of which I have, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also a genius.
Right.
That's the
I would agree with that.
Yeah, that's the upside. Yeah. We're geniuses. I mean, our scientists are like Einstein. Who do you have? And Newton. We also have Newton. Einstein and Newton.
We had Charles Osgood.
Yeah, he probably is right-handed. And, you know, our artists are like Da Vinci and Michelangelo.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
Bragger.
Yeah, but we do have a lot of problems also. As I say, most of them these disorders I actually have.
See that bear lapping up that good old country water? Sure makes a big hairy guy like me thirsty. That's when I wrap my lips around that tall, sweaty head of a bottle of good old country bear whiskey. As my daddy said, son, it's in the water. That's why it's yellow. Bear with beer. Bear with beer, liquid products, and there was brewery animal preserve.
All right.
Are you proud of yourself?
I kind of am.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, I wanted to mention this because, in fact, there's some pretty
exciting... I wanted to continue working, too, but anyway.
There's some pretty exciting bear-related news here.
Oh,
actually,
thank God.
Some of this is disturbing, some of it's good. As you may know, there's a burgeoning illegal trade in bear parts. Nearly gallbladders and bear bile and stuff like that.
Bear
parts? You know, like commercial parts, these parts. Well, there's bear parts. In Asia in particular, you know, there's a lot of traditional medicine.
Right.
And it's supposed to help with everything from arthritis to liver disease to, you know, basic kind of Viagra-related conditions and stuff like that. So, I mean, basically, as far as I can tell, in Asia, every obscure part of every obscure animal is an aphrodisiac. It's all like rhino horns and squid beaks and hippopotamus bottoms, and everything's being ground up for aphrodisiac. So anyway, give it a... Well, never mind. But,
do they work?
I don't think so. If they work, they wouldn't need so much of them. Anyway, as a result, they even have... I mean, because of this traditional medicine in China, Vietnam, Korea, even China, they even farm bears in not particularly pleasant conditions and stuff. So there's something called the Convention on Illegal Trade in Endangered Species. Where, you know, in fact, bears are not supposed to be used that way, they're not supposed to be sold for things like that, but they're even discovering that because of this belief that bear things, different parts of bears and stuff like that can be used to correct medical conditions, bear derivatives are even turning up in products like shampoo. So they're actually developing bear detection kits so that, you can test the product to make sure
that...
That no bears were harmed.
This is suspicious.
Yeah, this is actually true.
Okay.
The World Society for Protection of Animals are developing these kits so they can test products to make sure that, you know, bears are not being harmed to make them. Anyway, so that's interesting. And actually, they're considering developing kits for other animals threatened by trade, such as tiger, musk deer, shark, and whale. Because I think we all know which part of the whale gets ground up for an aphrodisiac. But anyway. And that's a problem because they use them for stability, basically, obviously. But anyway, the reason that it's ironic, according to one biodiversity expert, that traditional, or paradoxical, perhaps, more than ironic, that traditional medicine is endangering bears because the animal's unique physiology could help us if it were used by sort of more modern science.
Uh-huh.
It would be an interesting source of research. And here I'm going to be getting into a slightly... Well, and let me explain. It sort of fits in with the commercial that we began with. Because, first of all, bears remain inactive for up to 7 months during hibernation without developing osteoporosis, which is sort of interesting when you think about it. I mean, they just lie there. They don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they don't ever develop osteoporosis. And then, this is a joke about our engineering department, but I'm going to make it. But they also don't pee during the whole time. Okay. They don't. This is what's interesting. You might think
I mean, this is the kind of thing we should have asked Mr. Ambrosio about. It never occurred to me to ask him about the cave. We'd be good to ask Mr. Ambrosio a question. Do they get up to go to the bathroom? Well, they don't.
Well, of course they do. They're asleep.
They're asleep. Well, I thought maybe they sleepwalk over the corner of the cave and whiz there.
But in fact, they had like a catheter or something.
They don't, though. And they do not urinate at all during their hibernation. Instead, they recycle their urea, using it to make amino acids.
God.
To develop, manufacture new protein. So it must have, I don't know, gets absorbed in their system somehow, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I thought that was so fascinating.
That is fascinating, actually.
It is fascinating.
On one level, it's fascinating. On another level, it's comical.
Yeah. Okay, now these other things are new sciences that are just coming in. I haven't really had a chance to review them all, and they may be somewhat untoward.
So you did review that other one.
Yeah.
Bear thing you did review.
I researched that thoroughly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And these are ones that you haven't reviewed.
I haven't really had a chance to give them quite the same amount of scrutiny.
Which you ordinarily would.
Yeah. But basically, in Anchorage, Alaska, they had, they wanted to breed their octopus. They had a female octopus named Young Aurora. She's a giant, female giant octopus. And the only thing they had to breed her with was like this, old guy octopus. This is like a Hugh Hefner kind of story or something.
What was
like
his
that.
Name?
Strom Thurmond, actually, was his name. No, actually, it was an old guy octopus named, believe it or not, his name, you're going to think I'm making this up, his name was J1. It's like a hip hop.
J1.
J1. Yeah. So they put Young Aurora and J1 in the tank 7 months ago, hoping they'd get busy. But with octopuses,
so that's what in the tank means.
In this case, yeah. But then with octopuses, you can't really tell because they'll always just be draping all over each other. You know? I mean, who knows? Who knows what they're doing? Well, it turns out it was a success, Aurora has been dribbling long strings of eggs down the sides of the tank. This is a sign.
A good sign, I assume.
Meanwhile, guess what happened to J1?
Died?
Killed over death. Exactly right. But he died a happy man. Our octopus. Happy octopus. And so then last week, a sharp-eyed intern at the center in Seward, Alaska, noticed something peculiar in each of the eggs. Two red dots. And that's how they knew that these eggs were fertilized and baby octopuses were being born. And then it turns out that you might think that octopuses just sort of lay the eggs and that's it.
Yes, I had thought that.
You know, and then they're just gone?
Right.
But according to her keepers, Aurora had some moments of quiet desperation last Tuesday when several hundred gallons of water were drained from her tank. She didn't want to leave them. She didn't want to leave her eggs behind. You know, the water was going down, she was going down with it. She'd spray a burst of water onto the rocks on top of her eggs and all this kind of stuff. Apparently octopuses do sort of take care of the eggs and feel, doesn't make any difference.
Apparently we don't understand everything we should about octopus behavior.
There's so much to learn.
Yeah.
And then, here's my last piece of animal science news.
That's really kind of a shame.
We don't have a lot of time right now for this one. You know, people are always saying that a visualized thing, you know, visualize yourself hitting a home run or visualize yourself.
Yep.
Apparently, monkeys do that. Monkeys may visualize a predator or food in response to calls from other monkeys.
Right.
Was there
an obsession here with monkey news recently?
Yes. Researchers in Maryland played coos and screams recorded in the wild to captive rhesus monkeys and then were held stationary and then used a positron emission tomography, PET scanner, to monitor their brain activity. And it does appear that areas of the brain associated with vision and visual memory were stimulated by these calls. So it sounds like, you know, maybe you have like a monkey screaming, hey, and there's some papayas over here. Look at these papayas. And papayas the size of your head. And the other monkeys, rather than just going, let's go get that, they actually picture, they visualize the papayas.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty interesting, isn't it?
I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, whereas we just thought maybe the monkeys would go, they would just sort of react in a kind of autonomic way.
Mm-hmm.
Not so well. They actually visualize the papayas. I'm not really sure whether that's important or not. But did you say that I'm out of science news, animal news? In just back to the visualization in monkeys thing, I think the significance of that is that it's more to help us look at how good language may have developed in humans. Because obviously, you begin to develop words more if you kind of picture what you're talking about. So a monkey goes, and another monkey, you know, a couple hundred yards away starts thinking about the bias. the languages, that sounds are being paired up with pictures of the brain.
Yeah.
Now, that's sort of interesting because it actually does correlate to the thing that I brought up a little while ago, which is about the left-handed chimpanzees. Turns out one-third of chimpanzees are left-handed, which is only about 10% of human beings are left-handed. When we say left-handed, they favor their left hands if they're picking up raisins or bananas or whatever. It was thought initially that left-handedness was some kind of deviation, that in fact we became right-handed when we developed the power of speech. Because there seems to be, obviously, right-handed people are governed by the left side of their brain. The left side of the brain seems to be more connected somehow with the powers of speech. But as they studied these chimpanzees, who obviously don't really have the power of speech, it became clear that they had left-handed people, but they were left-handed chimpanzees too. So it wouldn't make sense that speech and right-handedness are somehow or other linked. But, I mean, the other thing you have to understand is that we're clearly not some kind of deviant throwback. We're an improvement. In 1992, for example, we had three people running for president, and I believe they were all left-handed. George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and Ross Perot, I think, were all left-handed. When you think about us representing only 10% of the population, you see what we've achieved.
Right. But you do want a couple of left-handers in your bullpen.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, you want a quarterback, you might want Michael Vick. He's left-handed. We hope that you've enjoyed today's show. If you didn't tune in at the beginning, we did have a long meditation on the career of Victor Horena, if you're Victor, you have to sort of think, well, people don't care anymore. People don't remember my accomplishments and stuff like that. And then the FBI comes on a day like this and sort of announces that now suddenly it's worth a million dollar reward for
him. Yeah, it must make him feel good.
Yeah.
He must think, man, all of a sudden I'm worth a million.
And then
I'm feeling like a million.
Yeah. But it does sort of raise questions about their crime-fighting capacity. They haven't caught Victor. And the other thing is that they're now offering a $500,000 reward for the guy who's the head of Los Mascheteros. Who's like on Meet the Press or something, you know? I mean, really, this guy gives interviews to journalists and stuff like that, and they have to offer a $500,000 reward to capture him, and they still can't capture him?
You know, would that be ethical for a journalist, though, to turn in?
That wouldn't be, and I'm glad no journalist does this, but if it's possible to get an interview with this guy, you know, it should be possible for the FBI to capture him.
Like, pose as a journalist.
Or
move in and snag him and get the $500,000.
Or it just means that he's not living on that deep cover. And I think also I'm reading about the hit, the guy who's head of Los Mascheteros, his name right there at the moment escapes me, but there's some talk that he may be on American Island this year, too. That starts up in January.
Yeah.
Oh, we may not have time, but you had that whole thing about Law and Order. What was the gist of that article that you were reading about Law and Order?
Law and Order, they're in the dumper as far as ratings go.
It's not making money anymore?
No, they're in the dumper.
Huh.
Because there are so many of these Law and Order reruns on cable.
Yeah.
That's part of it. There's one, there are three different Law and Order series, you know, on NBC.
Yeah, I think the FCC needs to set aside 1 hour a day when Law and Order isn't on anywhere.
Right, a moratorium
kind of thing. Like a day, yeah. 1 hour a day for people to get together with their families. You know, enjoy their loved ones, have important conversations. Find out how many kids they still have. But they think our producer, Bobby Sherwood.